Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
And I'm Dr. Tim Pinot. And today we have with us Carell Edwards. Carell is a professional 100 meter hurdler for Ocel and a five-time Team Canada member. Carell is a co-owner of Embrace Your Pace and director of performance at Embrace Your Pace Performance. Carell has a bachelor's of science with a specialization in human kinetics and a master's of arts in counseling psychology. She is currently working towards her license as a mental health counselor and her certification as a mental performance consultant through the Applied Association of Sports Psychology. And Carell, I am almost positive I mispronounced a word in there, Ocel.
It's Wazelle.
And I have a French last name. That's so embarrassing for me, right?
I know. I was wondering, actually, because I'm French. So I was like, is he French? But
from generations ago, far disconnected from me at this point. But yeah, it's back there. Thank you so much for being here today. We've really been looking forward to speaking with you. Of course, as always, though, we'll start our episode today with a brief meditation, which I'll be leading. So today we're just going to do a quick heartbeat meditation. And so oftentimes in breathing meditations, we're encouraged to kind of let our breath be natural, not trying to manipulate or control it in any way. But for today's meditation, what we're going to do is actually pair our breath with our heartbeat and kind of tune into the sense of a synchronicity between these bodily processes, breathing and our heartbeats. So if it is available to you and safe to do so, you can feel free to close your eyes. Though if you are driving or doing some other activity, perhaps save that for a later time. And you can begin just by starting to pull your attention inward. Perhaps acknowledge any sounds you hear in the environment around you, whether they're far away or close by. Any smells you notice. Acknowledge what's there outside of you. And intentionally let it go, bringing your awareness inward, next to the boundary of your body and the environment. Feel the contact between your feet and the ground. Between your body and whatever you're sitting on. Maybe you can even notice sensations on the parts of your skin that are exposed, some coolness on the backs of your hands. And again, acknowledging what's there. Allowing your attention to let go and come further inward to the breath. At first, simply see if you can allow your breath to be completely natural. Almost as if you're just trying to step out of your own way. Our brains have a natural inclination to try to make sense of or control whatever we're attending to. That process may happen instantaneously. See if you can just notice maybe subtle judgments. My breath should be deeper or slower. That impulse to control. And just allow your body to do what it was built to do. And settling into that rhythm now with full awareness. Take two fingers from one hand, place them on the wrist of the other arm, and find your pulse. And just like with the breath, perhaps you notice instant reactions or judgments. Maybe it's a judgment about how easy or hard it was to find your pulse. Maybe a judgment about the pace of your heartbeat. But just like the breath, can we step out of our own way and simply observe? Just observe our body do what it's built to do. And now that you've found your pulse and can follow the rhythm, I'll invite you to pair your breath so that you inhale to the count of 4 heartbeats and exhale to the count of 4 heartbeats. Simply observe what this feels like. You may notice the rate of your heartbeat actually changes on the inhale versus the exhale. And that may mean the length of your inhale is different than the length of your exhale. That's perfectly fine. We're simply staying open to whatever we feel as we pair the breath and our heartbeat. And then on your next inhalation, expand your breath, inhale and exhale, to 6 heartbeats. Inhaling 6 beats, exhaling 6 beats. Again, noticing any reactions to this change, any judgments about the quality of breath, any tightness that may have come back into your body. Now that we're trying to exert some control over our breath. And see if you can find that balance where you can stay in control of your breath without feeling tight. And on your next inhalation, expand again to 8 beats. Inhaling 8 heartbeats. Exhaling 8 heartbeats. As we get ready to bring this meditation to a close, release your fingers from your wrist, letting go of the awareness of your pulse, allowing your breath to return to whatever natural rhythm feels comfortable. Maybe wiggle your fingers and your toes, bringing some movement back into your body. And when you feel ready, sit back and open your eyes.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was really relaxing for me. That was nice.
Your voice is very soothing.
Yeah, it felt like you were in your groove there. Kind of felt that.
It's good. Yeah, it's nice. I remember, like, in the beginning teaching meditation, like, it very much not being a relaxing experience. And it took many years to, like, actually get to the point where I felt like I could kind of, like, meditate a little bit as I was guiding a meditation. Just a little bit. I think there's still the performance anxiety with it, but I feel it a little bit more now, and that feels good.
Thank you for sharing. That was cool. It was like a slightly different kind of practice. I haven't done a heartbeat meditation too often. It's a fun one. I like that.
Yeah. I learned it like years ago as part of like a, you know, in connection with like yoga. But yeah, I really like it. Just like, I think the heartbeat gives a really interesting focal point for attention. And I was just doing this meditation with a team I'm working with, because I think it also highlights, and I spoke to it a little bit in the guidance about like mindful control, how like, you know, because in sport performance, we really do need to exert a lot of control over our bodies, like to do the technique that is required of any given sport. And yet when we hold on too tightly, right, it creates tension and it creates anxiety, and we actually can't perform the technique. And so it's like, how do we exert control without tightness? You know, how do we find that balance? And I think this kind of meditation, I think, really, really taps into that, because we are trying to like control our breath in a way that we're often advised not to do in a meditation. And how do we do that while feeling the relaxation that comes with kind of like pairing our breath and our heartbeat without getting too tight, too tense as we try to exert control? So that's one of the things I really like about it.
Yeah, I like that too. And I think it kind of gives people like something tangible to connect their breath to and understand better like what their breath is doing. Because I think I was like inhaling and I was like going really fast, and then I was exhaling and I was like, okay, relax. So understanding that that's what's happening for me was really informative.
Cool. Yeah. Well, and so maybe that's actually a great, great segue, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk to you about was like the mental training that you've done as a professional athlete, you know, the kinds of things that you've found helpful, the kinds of things that maybe haven't worked. And of course we, you know, our shtick is really the mindfulness piece, but you know, if that hasn't been what you've trained or what you've practiced, you know, like what have you done in your career that has helped you with kind of the mental game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I started mental training kind of late in my career. And that's why I'm also I'm on a mission to help athletes sooner to learn these skills and start developing these skills way sooner in their career. But it just wasn't really something that I talked about or we talked about in track. And even thinking back to when I went to college, I did 2 years at Syracuse University, but was injured basically right away. And all the attention was focused on, you know, my physical recovery. So it was like, oh, you have a bulging disc? Cortisone shot next week. Let's do it. Meanwhile, I ended up being injured for 3 years. And at no point in time was someone talking about the mental aspect of my recovery and what I could do, because also not only the impact of just being injured, but getting me ready to return to play and what that would look like. And so I suffered with, you know, increased low confidence and doubts and performance anxiety when I returned to the track. And that's when I really was like, okay, I need to do my own research, I guess, or seek my own resources to try and help me get through some of this stuff. So I did have, I worked with a sports consultant back in Canada. She works with Hockey Canada. And so I started being introduced to some of these mental skills. And I'm trying to remember if we talked about mindfulness. I don't know that we talked about it in the concept of like, this is mindfulness, but we've definitely integrated the principle of what it's like to be in the present moment, distraction control, a lot of that. And I'm trying, yeah. And then as far as like, I just kind of kept developing myself and then going into the field as a consultant, just learning myself what else I think is important for athletes.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about that part. So how did you make that jump? Obviously you're still a professional athlete, that hasn't changed. But you're in the process, as Tim said at the beginning, of getting a bunch of education and degrees in sports psychology and counseling. And so what got you into this side of things?
Yeah, definitely my experience. I think I was always going to be like, I always wanted to work with athletes. I knew that much, but originally it was as a chiropractor. And I think that makes sense considering I had back problems and I saw like every physical therapist, if you will, possible in life, I feel like. And because the attention was still on the physical recovery, like it made sense that I kind of wanted to go into that. But when I finally, after 3 years off the track, I made a successful return, I was able to start running again. I kind of put school on hold and just focused on track. But in the meantime, I started doing motivational speeches with local high schools, just kind of sharing my story, you know, with the hope of inspiring them to pursue their dreams and be resilient. And there was a little girl who came up to me after one of them and pulled me aside, and she was talking to me about just personal struggles she was facing. And in that moment, something clicked. And I realized I still wanted to help people. I still wanted to work with athletes, but I was like, I like connecting with people on a deeper level. So how can I do that? And I brainstormed and landed on counseling. So that's kind of how I got into the field, but it's become so much more now just through my own personal experiences, the mental barriers I faced in terms of like performance, but also mental health, and realizing that there's really a gap and that we need to bridge that gap and we need to start treating athletes like whole people.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, some of the listeners may not be aware of, but like, you have just been recently like so open and so honest about that piece. And I kind of heard that too in even your answer to what did I do for mental training? Like your answer was just holistic, right? It was like mental training wasn't just about performance. It was about my overall well-being, and which really resonates with us. I mean, that's, you know, in terms of MSPE, we think that that holistic approach, the well-being of an athlete, which feeds their performance, is really like the great way to look at how to approach performance enhancement. But right, sometimes you come across, you know, pieces of well-being that are like really struggles, right? Like, and how continuing to push forward on performance becomes incompatible with our well-being, and that's such a tough crossroads to be at for an athlete. And you've talked about it in this like really vulnerable way. And so I just wondering if you'd be willing to share with our listeners a bit about that journey.
Yeah, definitely. I made a post, I think a few weeks ago or a month ago, really vulnerable video, kind of explaining to everyone where I was at with my mental health and how I needed to take a step back from training for the Olympics to prioritize my mental health. And that was really difficult, but also a really proud moment for me. To finally pick me over, like you said, pushing through everything, because that's how we've been conditioned as athletes, especially I find in the professional world, you know, there's just no space for emotions. People don't care how you feel. It's just, are you ready to perform? Are you ready to win? And so definitely a tough decision. And, you know, I look back now and I'm like, I should have made this decision like a year ago, but I just kept pushing till I kind of hit rock bottom, until it came to a point where it was a question of safety now. You know, I was having thoughts of self-harm and I was like, okay, this is not worth it. Like, sports isn't supposed to create all these emotions for you. So are we going to pick sports? Are we going to pick your safety? And I think it's funny because when we talked, Dr. Pino, before this little meeting today, and I mentioned, I was like, oh, I know you want to focus on kind of like my mental health and my experience with that. How do we tie that into mindfulness? And you're like, well, it is mindfulness. And I was like, you're absolutely right. Like, I've been really thinking about that, about how to take that, to make that decision for myself and to really step back and really tune in with myself, tune in with my body, tune in with my thoughts, and really come back to myself and come back to my truth and to realize like, this is what I need to do right now to feel better. Like that is mindfulness. So I thought that was really cool to come to that realization.
Yeah. And yeah, I feel like it is exactly the kind of decision that when I imagine an athlete kind of going through the MSPE program and incorporating mindfulness into their training routines and really embracing it as part of their lifestyle. Like that's exactly the kind of decision I hope they'd be able to make, you know, mm-hmm. like to know their truth and prioritize themselves and their well-being, because that's the big picture, right? Our best performance comes from our like authentic well-being.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where sports are behind right now. I mean, this win at all costs culture, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. How do you expect someone to perform well? And I mean, sometimes they might for a little mm-hmm. bit, but it's yeah. not sustainable over a whole career to perform well if you're not well, if you're, you know, you're not holistically well. And so if that can help performance, I don't understand why we're not putting more focus on that mental side of things.
Yeah. We recently had Sam Parfit on our podcast, who has helped start an organization, the True Athlete Project, that is all about trying to change the culture in youth sport. And as I'm listening to what you're saying now, I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, what you're touching on goes all the way down to little kids and how little kids are taught to relate to themselves and how they integrate sport into their identity. It's really, I mean, the sort of most, I guess, kind way that I can put it, like when I'm talking with people, as I say, we sort of do it backwards in sport, right? We don't necessarily think about, you know, like you said, it's almost like we're machines, right? Like just keep pushing and pushing and pushing instead of trying to kind of strengthen or encourage or motivate the things that sports science teaches us actually does produce best performance instead. And Tim and I have talked about this so much on our podcast, but it seems like what people really rely on starting at these young ages is fear. And how in that context, it really just highlights how brave your decision was to do what you're doing, but also to be a spokeswoman for it, to be able to come out and say, this is what I'm doing and this is why I'm doing it. It really kind of knocked our socks off. And we were super excited. That's why we're like, oh my gosh, we have to talk to her. This is incredible what she's doing. But it is, when you put it in its full context, it's pretty amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I mean, yeah, it was definitely scary. And, you know, part of me, I did it for my own healing. And also because I just was tired of people asking me like, when are you racing? How are the Olympics, you know, prep going? And I was like, oh, but mostly I wanted to do it because I wanted to kind of be a leader in it. And if I'm going to, you know, practice what I preach, if I'm going to be advocating for mental health for athletes and mental training, like who would I be to kind of pretend that everything's fine on my end? So I was really happy with the response in terms of how many people contacted me and were able to feel safe in sharing their struggles. And they also thanked me to have that space because everyone's struggling behind closed doors and no athlete feels that they can come out and say it because of the culture at this point. And there's something else I wanted to say just because of something you mentioned, Dr. Kaufman, just like when you look at the research and what that says and what helps performance, I remember last year I was injured again, a back episode. I had been off, I had two cortisone shots again, and I just was like at a low point and I was like, oh my gosh, we're 6 months out of Olympics. Like I'm in excruciating pain. What am I doing? I'm from Canada. So I was living alone in LA. My fiance was in Seattle. So I didn't have that support system and I didn't feel that I had that support from my team as well. And I remember calling kind of a mentor, a coach, and I'm not someone who likes to cry in front of people, but I was like sobbing on the phone. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I have no support. And they told me, do you want a gold medal or do you want friends? And I was like, right, got it. Okay, I'm being too sensitive. You're thinking about the wrong things. Let's dial in here and really focus. It doesn't matter how you're feeling outside of the track. And now we know the research. We know how important support systems are. So I just thought that was an interesting piece I wanted to share as well.
Yeah. Oof. And just like, it breaks my heart that like, that's the response. That's the response you got. But I also am aware, like, that's the response for so many athletes at all levels are getting when they spark enough courage to say to someone, a coach, a mentor, like, hey, I'm struggling. Like, oh, it just, that's what you get back, you know?
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's a really good point. Like, we don't want to say anything for so long. And then when you finally have the courage to say it, and then they just dismiss you, you're like, that's just furthers the narrative of like, right, okay, I have to be a robot, a machine, as you said, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you. This may be a bit of a tangent, but I think another issue that we've seen come up a lot in our podcast is around athlete identity and like career ending and things like that. And again, I know we're not talking about that with you. You're still very much in your career, but how that kind of mindset, you know, when things do stop, it just, what does it leave you with? Right. Mm-hmm. To say something like this dichotomy of, do you want a gold medal or friends? I want both. Right. I want both. That's part of being a healthy human being. And if I just said, I just want a gold medal, and then when I retire from Olympic competition, what does that leave me with? And definitely, something that people talk about all the time is how depressed and anxious they can get when their careers end because they never learned how to be balanced people.
Yeah. And that's huge. And I mean, you know, I'm at a crossroad right now. Like, I think at this point we're heading into May. It's pretty safe to say that the Olympics are out for me because I've taken like a month off training consistently. So it's just not, it just doesn't make sense. As far as like my track career as a whole, like, I don't know, like maybe on 2 months, I'll be like, let's go, let's start, you know, training again. Maybe next year I'll be like, let's go to Worlds. Like, I don't know, but it is something still, regardless of what I do in the immediate, you know, term, my career is coming to an end. Like, so it is something I'm having these conversations with myself. And yeah, it is a little scary. And I think I'm lucky because I do kind of have a plan for what I'm doing after, and I'm setting it up now. So that's definitely a sense of safety, but so many athletes don't have that because of exactly what you said. We're so focused on just winning, winning, winning. And who are you without winning? So.
Yeah. And yeah, right. Like, and there's just not space in the current culture for there to be conversations about what happens next, because the focus is like, well, who cares what happens after you win? I'm just trying to get you to the win, you know? But it's like that, I don't know. It just feels so, maybe this is hyperbolic, but like dehumanizing in a way. Like, I don't really care about you as a whole person. I just care about this one skill you have. And it's like, people can't thrive under those conditions.
Yeah. And I think for me, as someone who's always kind of had other pursuits in life and other goals, I kind of felt like an outcast almost in my sport, because it was kind of like, what do you mean you're pursuing something else? Like, you're not fully focused on this. And I'm like, So then I had this conversation with myself too. I'm like, oh my gosh, like maybe that's why I haven't gone to the top. Like, I haven't made the Olympics yet, because I'm just not all locked in track. That's it. That's all. But that's not sustainable. Hence, you know, why I'm dealing with depression and anxiety now, because I've tried to kind of keep it together for so many years. And it was just like, I just couldn't anymore. And I think forcing it is what kind of led to the depression and anxiety. And now that I've been able to step back, you know, I'm better able to cope and manage all of that.
Yeah. I'm curious, after having made this decision, you talked about that one conversation you had with a mentor who it sounds like was very discouraging. But like, yeah, what has it been like with teammates, with your coaches? Like, did you feel like you were supported in making this decision? Do you feel like there was people who were really questioning it? I guess I'm curious about that experience.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, this year, so I moved to Seattle. So I have a new team here, and from the jump, like, they've been really, really great. And I felt that I could be 100% honest with them. And like, I kind of sat down with them before even training. I was like, because of a lot of things that have happened throughout my track career and some unprocessed trauma that I've had throughout the track career. Like, I have a lot of triggers. And so here they are. So if I have a meltdown during practice, you know where it comes from, you know. So having that relationship with them right off the bat was really, really different for me and really great. And so it was pretty easy to let them know my decision. And I was in LA training because it's just in Seattle, it's cold and I didn't have access to indoor facilities. So training's been really tough in terms of resources and facilities. And so I had to go to LA, which was hard for me because I left my fiance. And even though we've done long distance for like years, with my anxiety and depression, it was really hard through the pandemic to kind of separate from him and leave. So I did that. But that's when my mental health just kind of took a turn for the worst. And I came back a week earlier than I was supposed to. When I texted my coaches, like, we need to talk. They're like, no problem. Come back. We'll deal with it when you come. And I told them, I was like, I don't know, but I'm thinking I might have to step back from training. And they were like, yes, do it. To the point where I was like, wait, what? Like that quick? I was like, don't you want to like fight for me a little bit? And my coach was like, what kind of person would I be if you're here telling me you're struggling mentally and your well-being is in danger and I would tell you to keep pushing? And I was like, oh, that's right. Okay, this is what we want. But it's so foreign to me that I was kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, this was way too easy to step back. So yeah, they've been great. They've been supportive. And honestly, even just like everyone in my circle, like everyone's just happy that I'm prioritizing myself, that I'm healing myself. And it was nice to know, because I think in my head, my identity was kind of wrapped up in being an athlete as well. And not achieving the goals I had set for myself. Like, I can't call myself an Olympian now. And that's a hard pill to swallow, but realizing that people really don't care about that at the end of the day. And that was nice to hear.
Yeah, right. You're more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was definitely, because there was a huge fear of letting people down, letting my sponsor Wazelle down. But yeah, the people who really do care about you, that's not important to them. Being happy and your well-being is more important. So that was nice and something to remember for other athletes. I mean, even if within the sports, people might not care about you as a human, the people who really, really do care and important in your life, they will understand.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you got to have that experience too, you know? And, but it just, it is so striking. I mean, that kind of your comment about like, that you at first had to be like suspicious of the compassion. It was like so unfamiliar, like so, and like, wait a second, this isn't right. You can't really be supportive of my well-being. Like,
but it's, are you like, trying to get rid of me? Right?
That's what it felt like. I was like, that was too, I was like, do you not believe I can make the team? Like, I almost for a second was like, screw this, let's go. Like,
brilliant reverse psychology from your coaches there.
Oh. But right, like that's how convoluted it's become, that we're like, oh, wait a second, your compassion must be nefarious in some way. It's like, no, actually, it's just human. It's like, I care about you.
Yeah.
You're talking about something that I think is so common and at the same time so personal. And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are about this, like how easy it is, especially the higher in levels of competition that you go, right? The more successful you are, the more the weight of external expectations kind of weighs on us, right? Like to the point that we kind of create this whole narrative of what everyone's going to think, right? And I guess sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. But I'm curious, like in your journey, when do you think that really kicked in for you, right? Where part of what made this so hard and part of what was so scary about doing what you did was just, like you said, that fear of letting everyone down.
To be honest, pretty much right away for me. I think that's just who I am, like innately as well. Like I just, from childhood, like I'm extremely hard on myself and I'm a perfectionist and I just want it do well all the time. I want everybody to, you know, be happy and all that. So, and be proud. But with track specifically, so I started when I was 15. And then by 16, I was hurdling. And then 6 months in, I made Team Canada. And then it was like all the expectations were thrown at me. Like, I remember I went to World Youth Championships in Ostrava, Czech Republic. And everyone's like, you're going to go and you're going to run whatever they time they said. And it was like a half second personal best. Like, I had I run that? Meanwhile, I've only been hurdling for 6 months. And so I went and I equaled my PR, but didn't place very well. And I remember, like, I was devastated, crying, sobbing. My dad was there and he's like, like, you literally just ran, you equaled your PR, you're on Team Canada, you just started track, like, can we put some perspective? But I think that's when all the expectations of I started caring about that, because it was like, you should be able to run that, you should be do this, you're going to be an Olympian, oh, you're going to beat this, you're going to go here. And so for me, it started at the beginning. Unfortunately, because I think part of, like, even my decision now, I was resisting it so much because it's like, I should make it to the Olympics. I have to, like, that's why we've been doing this for 15 years. That's why I've been pouring a ton of money into this. That's what people expect of me. And so, yeah, that's definitely, external expectations has been tough.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And like I said, I know that's personal stuff. But I think it's also something that I imagine would resonate with a lot of athletes who might be listening to this, or just, you know, just athletes who reach or get close to the level that you're at. It seems like, at least the ones that I talk to, there is this real focus on external expectations, which almost, it's like impossible to avoid. And you said in there too, I won't digress too much, but I think probably to reach the levels that you've reached, you have to be a little bit of a perfectionist, right? Right. And there's a lot of good things about perfectionism, but you really hit in there. Like, one of the things that turns perfectionism into something that can be kind of harmful is when we allow ourselves to become overly focused on others' expectations. And it just feels like that's such a big trap that athletes fall into. I think your example really highlights how easy those pressures are to just start internalizing. You know, it got taken away from you 6 months into your career. Here you are in this meteoric rise, and already, like, you had these standards set that weren't even yours.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think going back to kind of what we discussed at the beginning in terms of mental training, even, like, that's what I mean when I wish I had had access. Access to that earlier on in my career, because I think you're right. Like, there is, to a certain extent, like, people don't become great not being somewhat perfectionist, right? And there are assets to that, but how do we cope with that? How do we manage it? And I didn't have the tools. And so I just continue to internalize that year after year after year. And then being off for 3 years completely and leaving the sport as a junior athlete. I won nationals that year as junior athlete. And then I'm coming back and competing against senior athletes. And I'm like, what? Yeah, it takes a lot. And so I just wish I would have started that mental training aspect of things way sooner in my career.
Yeah, in a way, it's like, sorry, Tim, I'll keep this really short. It's almost not fair, right? Because you're saying, here I was not exposed to the tools that I might be able to use to manage those kinds of pressures, that kind of stress. And yet 6 months into your career, you said you were 16 years old competing at that level. You were already facing that level of expectation, right? So the stressors were there, right? The triggers were there, but you just weren't being taught the tools with how to manage this stuff. It's really mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we talk a lot about kind of the parallels between kind of mental training, physical training, and you know, that idea that, like, well, in the same way that, you know, if you just stop physical training, you know, you're going to lose endurance, you're going to lose strength. But it's the same thing with mental training. It's something you have to practice, you know. Yeah. But, like, another parallel that's here is that, like, just like it takes time to build physical skills, it takes time to build mental skills. And you know, you'd never like someone would like go out and run a really fast mile and be like, okay, cool, you're running a marathon at the Olympics next week. You know, it's like, no, you would give plenty of time to like train for that. But we don't allow that same kind of buildup for like the mental stress. The idea that as a 16-year-old, you're competing on a world stage and that like no thought given to the fact that it's just, you've just been doing this for 6 months, right? 6 months is not long enough to train mentally to deal with that kind of pressure, but you're just thrown into it and expected to like perform better than you've ever performed before. It's just, ooh. You know, it's ludicrous kind of, when you think about it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous when you put it like that. Like literally, off I go, different country, first time on Team Canada in front of a huge stadium, and it's like you're gonna run half a second faster than you ever have in your life.
Right.
That makes no sense.
and when you tie your PR, you feel like a failure. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. That's because I mean my dad was like, you literally tied, and I was like, yeah, but that's not good enough. People were expecting X, Y, Z of me. And so that just went down a hole. But I like what you said, Dr. Pino, about building. And I think even like late in my career and with coaches, you know, they say like, you just have to be confident. You just have to be positive. You just have to do this. But I'm like, okay, how do I get there? Yeah, right. Nobody's telling you how to get there. They're just being, do this. And it's like, thank you. I know. Right. But how do I build that? And nobody's helping you with that. So.
Well, and to bring this just for a moment back to mindfulness, I think that's at least for me. And I think, you know, Tim, we've talked about this some too. That's part of what we really like about this approach and how we developed MSPE was to be able to teach some of those skills in a tangible way, right? To be able to practice these things and to use the physical training parallels. And, you know, our hope in people who do our mental training program, but others, is that they can develop the mental muscle to be able to thrive in these kinds of situations. But yeah, I mean, you know, we used this word a moment ago. It's ludicrous, right? That you're thrown in this situation without any formal training and how to deal with it and have this unbelievable success and walk away feeling like a failure. It's really mind blowing. And yet it's incredibly common in this world, right? In this world of elite sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it presents a good example. Oh, sorry, Carl, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I don't know, just kind of seeing that in perspective. It's kind of sad. It kind of hurts me to be like, damn, like to realize how far back it goes and how it's programmed from such a young age. It's just, it's really too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I think that really kind of gets at kind of what I wanted to say. I'm circling back to Keith's comment before about perfectionism, like sometimes being a good thing or like being part of kind of thing for any elite athlete's kind of mindset in some ways. But it's like when that perfectionism comes from a place of fear, and like fear of making a mistake, fear of failure, right? It creates that like opportunities for disappointment, right? And very few, if any, opportunities for real authentic success, right? Because the expectations are just so, so high. Mm-hmm. But if you have this like, you know, perfectionistic mindset, but it's really based in curiosity instead of fear, the whole dynamic changes, yeah. Right? Because there has to be some degree of kind of impulse to want to get better, to want to improve, to have the kind of dedication and commitment you need to train in the way that's required for your body to do the things you're asking it to do. But if you can look at every performance, even if it doesn't go the way that you wanted or the way that other people expected, and if you can approach that with curiosity, like, huh, I wonder, like, why did it go that way? You know, and that opens doors. Like, well, what was good about that performance? Okay, what would I want to tweak in the future? Not judgmentally and not assigning blame, but just kind of objectively. Like, I wanted to run X time, but I ran Y time. And like, how do I bridge that gap? Like, that's a reasonable question to ask as an athlete. And if you can do that without shame and you can do it with curiosity, I think it allows us to just, that's sustainable, right? Like, that's how we stay in a career for the long term and not get burnt out and not have, right, like all these hits to our well-being.
Yeah, No, I love that. That's really well said. And I think, and I, like, I just wanted to make it clear too, because I don't want people to listen to this and be like, oh my gosh, she's like blaming someone else. Like, that's not what I'm doing. I am a perfect, like, I just, that's who I am in all aspects of my life. And I, like you said, it's been from a place of fear of failure. I totally have that. And so I came into the sport with that personality, whatever, that character already. But I was also pretty much right off the bat labeled as like the head case, because I couldn't perform sometimes under, you know, at big championships. Like, I don't think I've ever, at a world stage, I've never performed well, I don't think. on a national level, you know, I performed well, but on world stage, I'd get there and kind of choke, if you will. But instead of being like, okay, this is what you're struggling with, we're going to help you, we're going to give you the tools to deal with that. It was just kind of like, you're a head case, figure it out, good luck.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the distinction you're making. I can't speak for anyone else. I certainly didn't hear you blaming others. I think that's, I guess I kind of think it's the opposite. In fact, I think it's an unavoidable thing that ends up happening to a lot of athletes, is they end up kind of internalizing what, you know, the pressures that just come, right? It's no particular person's fault, or it's not like there's someone necessarily wagging their finger at you saying you must do this. I think it's just part of the culture and the way the world of sport works. But certainly, yeah, I can appreciate what you were saying.
And right, could you imagine if in the same way they did with your physical talent, you know, they saw you and said like, okay, here's someone with a tremendous amount of potential, right? Like, you're going to go to the Olympics, you're going to go to the world, right? Said, all right, let's nurture that. Let's hone that. What if they did the same thing with your perfectionism? Rather than label you as a head case, like, okay, you've got some raw talent here, because guess what? An elite athlete needs that kind of mindset. Let's figure out how to make it work for you. Like, what if someone had approached you that way, you know?
Totally. And honestly, that's like my mission as a consultant, and, you know, down the line, I want to get my license as a therapist as well. That's what I want to do. Like, I want to normalize these barriers, and people act like the people at the top don't have any issues. And I'm like, we all have them, but let's not make it like, this is wrong, you're abnormal if you have this, right? Be like, okay, this is what you have, let's work with that. Just as you would individualize a physical program, let's individualize a mental program so that we can maximize your potential.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great point for us to wrap up on. I think we could probably talk to you all day. This has been wonderful. But we want to thank you so much for your time. And we know that sort of the way, you know, we discovered you was through social media posts. And so I don't know if you are willing to share, if you want to let people know how they can follow you. You're welcome to share that with our listeners if you'd like.
Yes, definitely. So you can find me at EYP_performance. That's for Embrace Your Pace Performance. You can also check out our website, embraceyourpace.com. And then my personal Instagram. Oh, this is on Instagram, by the way. And my personal Instagram is just my name, Karel Edwards. That's probably where I'm most active. So that's the best way to follow and keep in touch.
Wonderful. Thank you. And for any listeners who want to be in touch with us, with the MSPE Institute, you are welcome to visit our website at www.mindfulsportperformance.org. We also have an Instagram page for our podcast, which is at mindful_sport_podcast. We also have a YouTube channel where we post all of our meditations that appear on our podcast. So Tim's heartbeat meditation will be up there when we release this episode. You're also welcome to connect with us on our MSPE Facebook page. And I am on Twitter, Dr. Keith Kaufman. My handle is at mindfulsportdoc. And we also just want to take a moment and thank our colleagues, Dr. Carol Glass, for all of her support for our podcast behind the scenes, and our wonderful producer, Taylor Brown of EnduroMind, for all of his work and all of his support. So thank you guys. And thank you again, Carol, for joining us. And thank you to everyone who listened.
Yeah, thanks, Carol, so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.